Hello, my friends, and welcome to a new episode from English Plus Podcast. And in today's digest episode, we have a lot to cover. First, in our words of wisdom section, we're going to talk about a special proverb, as you sow, so shall you reap. And we have a very special quote for today. We're going to draw some wisdom from Heraclitus. Then we're going to move on to our word power section. We're going to talk about the expression blowing off steam and the special word ascetic. After that, in our Did You Know section, we're going to talk about lost planets in space, and we're going to talk about your memory, and we're going to find out whether it's lying to you or not. But I almost forgot that before we do that, before the Did You Know section, I have the very first question that I'm going to answer in this episode in our Q&A section. And I've already had a few questions for the days to come, so if you want to include your question in the upcoming episodes, send your questions to ask@englishpluspodcast.com. And now, before we start, let me just tell you about the last two sections. In the language section, we're going to talk about the word sail and how we can use it in different contexts. And we're going to talk about the common mistakes people make when they use the word like. Finally, in our literary echoes section, we're going to talk about a very special poem, When That Day Comes by Phoenix. And we're going to finish with a very intriguing question in our spotlight. You don't want to miss any of that. And now, without further ado, let's start with today's proverb, as you sow, so shall you reap. Don't go anywhere, I'll be right back. Have you ever planted a seed, eagerly awaiting what would bloom? Maybe you were met with a beautiful flower, or perhaps a tangle of prickly weeds. Our lives work much the same way. The choices we make, the words we say, the actions we take, they're all seeds, silently shaping our future. Have you ever wondered what your own choices are planting? Are you cultivating a life of joy or one tangled in regret? In our daily proverb today, we'll dive into the ancient wisdom of as you sow, so shall you reap, and explore how this simple idea holds profound power to transform our lives. Now, this proverb, found in various forms across cultures and religions, is a reminder of an inescapable truth. Our actions have consequences. Sometimes those consequences are immediate. Eat too much sugar, get a bellyache. But often the results of what we sow take time to bloom. Imagine planting an apple seed. It won't bear fruit tomorrow or even next year. But if you nurture that seed, in time you will enjoy a harvest. The same is true with our life choices. Sow seeds of kindness and you cultivate a world where kindness is returned to you. Plant seeds of anger and resentment, and bitterness will take root in your own heart. The principle of as you sow, so shall you reap, extends far beyond the obvious moral implications of good versus bad deeds. Think about these examples. Let's talk about effort. That late night spent studying instead of partying might lead to better grades and expanded opportunities down the line. And what about relationships? The time invested building trust and connection with loved ones creates a strong support system when storms inevitably hit. And what about your health? Choosing to nourish your body with healthy food and exercise creates a foundation for long-term well-being. Now, of course, sometimes life throws a curveball. We can't control everything that happens to us. Bad things happen to good people, and good things happen to undeserving ones. We all know that. But the principle still holds. Even within those uncontrollable circumstances, our choices about how we respond, whether with resilience or despair, generosity of spirit or bitterness, all of these are planted seeds that will significantly shape our experience. Now, this proverb isn't about scaring us into being perfectly good all the time. It's about awareness. It's a reminder that even small, seemingly insignificant actions do matter. Each choice plants a seed. So the key question becomes, what are we planting in our lives? What kind of harvest do we want to see? Now, before we move on, let me leave you with a thought. If you could look into the future and see a glimpse of the harvest your current choices are creating, would you be satisfied? If not, it's never too late to change course. Every single day, we have the chance to sow new seeds for a better, brighter future. So my friends, let's choose wisely. And that was about today's proverb. Now let's move on to talk about today's quote. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Imagine a river. Is it ever the same river twice? The swirling patterns may look similar, but the water itself is always in flux, always changing. The ancient philosopher Heraclitus taught us there is nothing permanent except change. Think about that. Does it scare you? Excite you? Leave you feeling a bit unsettled? In our daily quote today, we'll unpack this fascinating concept and discover why embracing change might be the key to a life of more joy and less worry. Now let's face it, change is hard. We humans crave stability and predictability. Whether it's an unexpected job loss, the end of a relationship, or even just having to try a new takeout place because our favorite one closed down, change throws us off balance. And that's why Heraclitus' words have echoed through the ages. They challenge our most fundamental assumptions about how the world works. But what if change isn't something to fear, but something to embrace? Think of it less like a disruptive force and more like the natural rhythm of the universe. Seasons change. Is that bad? We age and our bodies change. Is that inherently negative? When we fight the reality of change, we create internal conflict and ultimately more suffering. Now, this isn't about pretending bad things don't hurt. Loss is painful. Change can be terrifying. I know that. I understand. But resisting that change only traps us in the pain. Imagine that river again. A fallen tree branch gets snagged on a rock, fighting against the current, becoming battered and splintered. Yet a leaf, surrendering to the flow, gracefully dances downstream to who knows where. Now, here's where this gets exciting. When we see change as inevitable, we can shift our perspective. And that can lead to growth, resilience, and presence. Change becomes an opportunity for learning and transformation. Instead of asking, why is this happening to me? You can ask, what can I learn from this? And like a muscle gets stronger with use, each time we navigate change, we become more flexible, more adaptable. And the fear of change often focuses on future worries or dwelling on the past. Embracing the ever-changing now brings us back to the present moment, the only place we truly have control of. So, how can we put this into practice? Here's your challenge. Next time you feel that tightening of anxiety when change swoops in, try this. Pause, take a deep breath, and simply say, okay, here comes something new. Notice how that simple act of acknowledgement changes your innate state. And always remember, my friends, trying to hold on to permanence is a losing battle. Instead, can you learn to dance with the ever-changing rhythm of life? Well, I'm sure that you have your own experiences with change. And if you have anything to share with us, I would love to hear it from you. And I hope that you like our quote for today and you like this ancient wisdom that is still true today. But that's the end of our Words of Wisdom section. And next, we're going to move on to our Word Power section. And we're going to talk about blowing off steam and ascetic. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Ever been so mad you felt like your head might explode? Or so wound up with energy you could run a marathon without training? Maybe someone cut you off in traffic or your kids drove you bonkers. That's where the quirky phrase blowing off steam comes in. But what does it really mean? And are there good and bad ways to do it? Well, in our English Express, we'll uncover this expression, we'll learn some fun ways to release pent-up energy, and make sure you don't end up blowing your top instead. Now let's get visual. Imagine an old-fashioned steam engine. It needs a pressure valve, or the whole thing will go kaboom. We humans work similarly. Stress, frustration, anger, even intense excitement, these emotions build up internal pressure. Blowing off steam is all about finding healthy ways to release that pressure so we don't explode in unhealthy ways. Now, here are some common scenarios where blowing off steam is crucial. It happens with work stress, after an intense day full of deadlines and difficult coworkers. And what about parenting overload? When the kids seem determined to fight every rule and drive you bananas. And there's also the bottled up emotions, when you're feeling sad, anxious, or just generally overwhelmed. So what does healthy blowing off steam look like? Here's the key. It's about channeling that energy, not letting it control you. If you want to do it the healthy way, get physical. Exercise is fantastic. Punching a pillow, not so much. Go for a run. Dance like nobody's watching. Pound some clay. Move your body in ways that feel good. And express yourself. Journaling, talking to a trusted friend, even screaming into the void, well, ideally somewhere nobody will think you've gone completely insane, is a good way to blow off steam. And there's also mindfulness. Sometimes pausing to breathe deeply is all it takes to diffuse the situation. Now, some ways to blow off steam are downright destructive. Yelling at someone, smashing things, reckless behavior. The problem? They might feel good momentarily, but often make the underlying issues even worse. Not to talk about the feelings you hurt and the things you break along the way, which is never a good thing. And now I will leave you with a challenge. Next time you feel that pressure building, notice it with curiosity, not judgment. Then make a conscious choice. Will you react in a way that harms or heals? Can you find a fun, safe, and maybe even creative way to blow off that steam and come back to yourself feeling stronger than ever before? Think about it this way and always try to find healthy ways to blow off steam. And if you have your own special ways to blow off steam, in a healthy way of course, why don't you share that with us? I would love to know how you manage anxiety and stress, and I hope I learn a thing or two from you. But that, my friends, was our expression for today, blow off steam. And next, we're going to talk about a very special word, ascetic. And here, by the way, the spelling is a little bit tricky. It's A-S-C-E-T-I-C, ascetic. But that's what we're going to talk about next, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever heard someone described as living an ascetic lifestyle and wonder what that even means? Are they secretly part of some mysterious club? Do they eat nothing but crackers and water? And what's with refusing all those comfy things the rest of us enjoy? Our word today talks about just this. We're venturing beyond the dictionary definition and into the fascinating and sometimes surprising world of the word ascetic. Now, let's get down to the basics. An ascetic is someone who practices extreme self-denial and shuns worldly pleasures. Now, that might conjure up images of monks living in bare bones monasteries or ancient hermits meditating in caves. And yes, that's where the historical roots of asceticism lie. Think religious figures across many faiths who dedicated themselves to spiritual goals through fasting, simple living, and intense focus on the divine. However, the idea of asceticism has a broader reach than you might think. It relates to modern minimalism, people choosing to downsize their belongings and drastically simplify their lives have a touch of the ascetic spirit. Or what about focused athletes? Those who dedicate themselves to rigorous training schedules and sacrifice many indulgences for the sake of peak performance also have an ascetic streak. And there are also the Stoic philosophers. Their emphasis on self-control and enduring hardship without complaint draws a connection back to these ancient practices. Now let's be clear, asceticism isn't all about deprivation for the sake of suffering. It stems from the belief that renouncing certain comforts can bring you greater clarity, well, removing distractions can focus the mind on deeper understanding, and renouncing certain comforts can help you achieve self-mastery. Resisting temptations strengthens discipline and resilience. And finally, there's also the spiritual connection. Some believe embracing simplicity opens them to a greater awareness of the divine or the interconnectedness of life. And by the way, my friends, I'm not selling you any lifestyle. You choose the lifestyle you like, but we're just trying to understand what's behind the word ascetic. Now, before we go, here's a challenge for you. Think about your own life. Are there any areas where a little dose of asceticism might be beneficial? Maybe it's limiting mindless screen time, cutting out impulsive purchases, or trying a simpler diet for a while. You don't have to become a full-blown hermit, but where might a bit of focused self-denial bring more freedom than we'd think? Think about that, and if you have any experience with asceticism, in any form and at any level, I would love to hear from you. But now, my friends, we're moving on to a very special and a new addition to our Digest episodes, and that is the Q&A section. I told you in earlier episodes that you can send me questions to ask at EnglishPlusPodcast.com, and you can share some information about yourself that I will share on the podcast. This place is for you to ask me any questions you want. It can be about learning English, it can be about anything that we cover on this podcast, or it can be questions about the podcast itself and the process. So my friends, next I'm going to answer a question sent to me by Isabella Suarez from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Well, don't skip ahead, because this question is beneficial for all of you. So don't go anywhere, I'll be right back. I'm very excited about the new Q&A section. And my question for today is from Isabella Suarez from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Isabella is a marketing manager at a tech startup in Rio. She's passionate about languages. She's determined to improve her English for both career advancement and her love of travel. Now, her question was, I struggle to find time to practice English. Do you have any tips for fitting in into a busy schedule? Well, hi, Isabella, and thank you very much for this fantastic question. I understand that many of us find it incredibly challenging to balance our busy lives with the desire to become fluent in English. Now, since you live in amazing Rio de Janeiro, I understand that you have a vibrant schedule, but don't worry. Improvement is absolutely possible, and it's easier than you think. Now, here's the good news. You don't need hours upon hours to make progress. Let's talk about ways to weave English practice into your existing routines. The first tip I have for you, and by the way, for everyone who's listening, because I'm sure that applies to a lot of you. The first tip is to think small. Focus on micro moments, waiting for the bus, during your commute, or even while cooking. Download short podcasts, listen to English music, or try language learning apps that offer quick lessons. But don't think about needing to sit down for hours. Think small. Think about those micro moments. Fill them with some English. Now, we live in a time where all these things are possible and are just at reach. But that's not everything. You can also transform daily tasks. You can turn chores into a learning experience. You can listen to English audiobooks or news while doing housework, or describe your actions in English as you go about your day. And you said you love travel. You can leverage that to your own benefit. Before your next trip, learn essential travel phrases, watch movies or TV with English subtitles, or follow travel bloggers or vloggers who speak English. That will definitely benefit a lot. And my friend, tap into technology. Now, you're obviously a tech-savvy person, but tap into technology, those fantastic apps that turn language learning into a game. We have short focus sessions with platforms like Duolingo or Memrise. These short focus sessions can really add up. And finally, if you can find a community with whom you can practice your English conversation, that's perfect. Look for those English conversation groups or language exchange partners in Rio. Now, practicing with others boosts confidence and motivation. And remember, my friend, progress over perfection. Consistency is key. That's most important. It doesn't have to be 2 hours or 3 hours or 10 hours every day. It can be only a few minutes every day. But every day, consistency is key. So I hope I answered your question. And once again, Isabella, thank you very much for this great question. So a big shout out to Isabella and to English Plus audience in Rio de Janeiro and Brazil in general. And to everyone listening to us, keep your questions coming. Send them to ask@EnglishPlusPodcast.com. I'd love to help you on your English learning journey or any other questions that are related to what we talk about and to our podcast. And now we're going to move on to our Did You Know section. We're going to talk about lost planets next. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. I imagine our solar system, the sun, a steady anchor with planets tracing predictable orbits. But what if that wasn't the whole story? What if there are planets out there wandering the cosmic darkness, completely unbound by the gravity of a star? Science fiction? You might think so, but no. It's a science fact. Now get ready, because today on Did You Know, we're diving into the mysterious world of rogue planets. Now these rogue worlds are the nomads of the galaxy. So how does a planet just go rogue? Now here's where things get wild. First we have the boot. Picture a young solar system in the making, full of swirling chaos. A giant planet forms too close to another, and bam, gravitational slingshot sends it hurtling off into space, never to return. And there's also the stellar shakeups. Sometimes star systems pass a little too close, and their gravities wreak havoc. A planet can be yanked out of its orbit, left to wander the interstellar void. But here's the even weirder part. Rogue planets might outnumber stars. Scientists think there could be billions of these lone travelers out there. So what does life look like on a rogue planet? Well, without a sun, it's definitely dark and frigid. But some scientists theorize that they could retain internal heat from their formation, potentially harboring strange life forms beneath icy surfaces. Detecting rogue planets is tricky. They don't emit their own light. We mostly find them by the way they briefly distort the light from distant stars as they pass by. It's like trying to spot a moth flitting in front of a faraway streetlight. And now before we move on to our Know Yourself section, I want you to think about this. These wandering worlds hint at just how vast and unpredictable the universe really is. Could rogue planets be harboring ecosystems entirely alien to anything we know? Could Earth someday be flung into the darkness? Maybe the next time you glance up at the starry night, you'll picture all those unseen travelers out there and feel a thrill of cosmic wonder. And now, my friends, we move from the mysteries of the cosmos to the mysteries of our own minds. Is your memory lying to you? That's what we're going to talk about next, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Think back to a childhood birthday party. The cake, the presents, your best friends laughing. But is that memory crystal clear? Could there be details you've changed over time? Maybe even without realizing it? Today, my friends, we're challenging the way you think about memory. Get ready, because those treasured moments you hold on to might not be as accurate as you always believed. Now, here's the shocker. Our brains don't work like video cameras, faithfully recording every detail and storing them away perfectly. Memory is more like a messy scrapbook. Each time we recall something, that memory subtly changes. Think of it this way. We love filling the gaps. If there are details we don't truly remember, our brain helpfully fills those in. And here's where it gets trippy. Those filled-in parts can become the new truth we remember next time. And there's the emotional coloring. How we felt at the time of an experience and also how we feel now influences what is stored and how it's retrieved later. That amazing vacation might seem even rosier in retrospect, while a traumatic incident can become distorted by fear and pain. And there's the power of suggestion. Hearing someone else's version of an event, even a minor detail, can bleed into our own memory. Ever argued with a sibling about what really happened when you were kids? We can unknowingly absorb others' experiences into our own. So what does this mean? Is every memory suspect? Well, not necessarily. Here's the thing. While our memories might not be perfect records, they still hold important truths. They shape our sense of self, our relationships, and our understanding of the world. It's about awareness, not despair. Now, before we move on, I want you to think about an important memory you have. Is it possible there are gaps or perspectives you hadn't considered? Is the emotional core still true regardless of the details getting a little fuzzy? Understanding that memory is a dynamic process helps us appreciate both its power and its limitations. And as usual, if you have anything you would like to share with me, I would love to hear about it. But with that, my friends, we're done with our Did You Know section, and we'll move on to our language section. Next, we're going to talk about sail. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever wandered through a store, seen a bunch of for sale signs, then noticed something else was on sale and wondered, is there a secret code here? Do they all mean the same thing? Or is there some sneaky sales lingo I don't know? Well, today on English Usage, we're diving into those signs and clearing up the world of sale terminology. Okay, let's break these terms down. Now let's start with sale. Well, this is the most general term. When something is simply announced as a sale, it usually means there is a discount. but it could refer to a whole store having discounted prices, specific categories of products, or just a handful of items. Think of it as the umbrella term for all things bargain hunting. And then we have for sale. This means the item is, well, available to be purchased. This could be anything from a used car with a for sale sign in the window to a house listed with a realtor. There's no guarantee of a special price yet. Now, on sale is different. Now, here's where the shoppers get excited. On sale means the item has a temporarily reduced price. It's your signal to grab that thing you've been eyeing for less than usual. Now, let's add some fun twists. There is the clearance sale. This is when stores really want to get rid of stuff, often because they're making room for new inventory. Expect deeper discounts, but sizes and selection might be limited. And there's everything must go. Now, this usually means a store is closing down and they're slashing prices to sell all their remaining stock. So my friends, next time you see those tempting signs, you'll know exactly what kind of shopping adventure you're in for. Now, here's your challenge. Pay attention to the wording next time you're out shopping. Can you spot the subtle differences between sale, for sale, and on sale in the wild? Well, happy bargain hunting! And that was about our usage tip for today. Next, we're going to talk about the common mistakes we usually make when we use the word like. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever listened to someone and their sentences seem just peppered with the word like? Like, it was so distracting you, like, couldn't even focus? Well, get ready, because today in our common mistakes segment, we're putting like under the microscope. We're going to figure out when it's okay and when it's, like, totally ruining your communication game. Okay, let's admit, like is a super versatile word. It has tons of legitimate uses. We can use it to talk about similarity. This tastes like chicken. Or approximation. I spent like 20 minutes looking for my keys. We can use it for quotation. He was all like, get out of my way. But here's where things get messy. Like can become a filler word. When like pops up as a meaningless pause in every other sentence, so I was like walking down the street and like I saw this really cute dog. Well, this makes you sound unsure and less focused using all these likes as filler words. And we also use them as verb substitutes, which is not a good idea. Well, this cringe-worthy trend involves cramming like where a proper verb should be. I was like so hungry. I could eat a horse. Yikes. Just remember, don't cram like anywhere. If you can use another verb that you know about, just use it. Don't use like. So how do we fix this like problem? Now, first, awareness is key. Start noticing how often you use like as a filler. Record yourself talking or ask a friend for honest feedback. And there's the pause power. When you catch yourself about to say like, take a silent pause instead. It sounds more polished. And there's the word swap, of course. If you have like disease before verbs, substitute real verbs. I felt so hungry. Not I was like so hungry. Or I thought it was so cute. Just get rid of those extra likes you don't need. Now you might say, why is this important? Everybody does that. Maybe not everybody does that. But remember, I'm not talking about these as real mistakes, but I'm talking about something that will help your communication become stronger. And powerful communication is clear and precise. So the next time you open your mouth, ask yourself, is this like really necessary? Could I say this in a stronger, more direct way? With a little practice, you can banish those pesky likes and elevate your speech game. And now, my friends, we're done with this language section, and we're finally there in my favorite section, the literary echoes section. We're going to talk about a poem that's called When That Day Comes by Phoenix next, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever thought about the moments in life when words fail us? When the simple act of speaking or even smiling becomes a challenge that seems insurmountable? Well, today in our daily poem, we'll confront those difficult moments head on, finding within them a love that endures. The poem is called When That Day Comes, and it speaks of a connection that transcends illness, age, any force that threatens to silence what's deep inside. Now, let me read the poem to you first, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about it. When That Day Comes by Phoenix. When you can't speak without taking the time to gather the thoughts, both yours and mine, when that day comes. When you can't smile and it won't last, all in a single look I will get, you trust, if that day comes. When I call you and you don't come, for ages long ain't felt but some, when that day comes. When I whisper and hope there might be you in there, and I never stop, it may be true, if that day comes. When your arms can't reach, half a hug will do, it does not matter, they're yours, I knew, when that day comes. When words fail you, when I finally leave, I know my words in vain would tell you, please, do not grieve. For when that day comes, I will love you like today. When all the world is ours, I will love you like yesterday, when I wrote you my first line. And from this day forth, I will love you when I'm weak. I will love you when I'm strong. Until that day comes, I will love you all the time. I hope you like the poem as much as I do. Now let's dive into the opening lines. When you can't speak without taking the time to gather the thoughts. This sets a scene. We sense confusion. Maybe fading memory on the speaker's part. Well, this poem isn't sugarcoating the realities that may come with growing older or illness. But beneath that, notice the tenderness. Both yours and mine. The speaker isn't just observing. They're holding space for that confusion, sharing it. The poem moves through a series of when that day comes scenarios. With each one, there's a sense of loss, a smile that won't last, a call that goes unanswered. Yet the responses always come back to love and a deep, unspoken knowing. Like in the lines, it does not matter, they're yours, I knew. Now here's where this poem becomes truly powerful. The speaker imagines the day words finally fail. The day they might have to leave their loved one. Even then, defiance blazes. Do not grieve. Why? Because their love isn't bound by grand gestures or eloquent expressions. The final stanzas are a promise that transcends time. I will love you like today. I will love you like yesterday. I will love you all the time. This poem is saying that those quiet moments when words and maybe even memory falter, those moments hold love just as true and powerful as the most vibrant days. Now, this poem confronts what we fear and shows us something beautiful within that fear. So here's your challenge. Think about someone you love. Imagine a future where communication becomes difficult. Could you see the love that endures, even in silence? Could you offer the kind of unspoken understanding this poem portrays? If you have any experiences like that, or if this poem means anything special to you, please share that with me. I would love to hear what you think. And that was, my friends, our poem for today. But we're not done. We still have just one last segment for today, the Spotlight segment. That's coming next. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Would you trade places with someone born 50 years from now? Sure. Maybe they'll have flying cars and robot butlers. But will they really be happier than we are? Now, in our spotlight today, we're ditching the sci-fi fantasies and getting real about the future of happiness. Is progress guaranteed? Or are we overlooking something fundamental about what makes our lives good? Let's acknowledge the obvious. Technological and material progress has done incredible things. Our ancestors would marvel at our relative comfort and ease. Yet studies on happiness paint a puzzling picture. Even with increased wealth in many parts of the world, average happiness levels haven't skyrocketed the way you might expect. So why the disconnect? Here's where things get interesting. There's the adaptation treadmill. We humans are fantastic at adapting. Win the lottery? That initial thrill fades faster than you think. We're wired for striving. Not endless contentment, so each new achievement just becomes the new normal. And there's the comparison trap. Social media creates an endless highlight reel of everyone else's seemingly perfect lives. This fuels dissatisfaction, even if we logically know it's distorted. And there's the meaninglessness. All the gadgets in the world won't fill an existential void. Humans need purpose, connection. A sense that their lives matter beyond immediate pleasures and possessions. So does this mean future generations are doomed to discontentment? Well, not necessarily. But it does suggest that happiness rests on much more than just technological advancement. Here's where we might need to change our focus. We should focus on inner growth over outer gains. What if we prioritize cultivating inner qualities like resilience, mindfulness, and compassion alongside bettering our external world? What about if we build strong communities? Loneliness is an epidemic. Nurturing meaningful relationships might be more crucial to future happiness than any invention. And what about a purpose-driven philosophy? Can we harness technology and progress to solve big problems and create a more just and sustainable world? Doing meaningful work contributes deeply to well-being. So, of course, I have no answers because that's not what I do. My job is to pose questions, and your job is to answer those questions and share them with me if you like. And maybe ask me more questions. We can start a discussion based on today's spotlight or any other topic we talked about in today's episode. So my friends, will those future humans pity us or learn from us? Perhaps the key question isn't whether they'll have more, but whether they'll know how to create a life where more isn't always what they crave. Are we laying the groundwork for a society that understands true well-being doesn't just come from what we have, but who we are? Are we doing that? Ask yourselves this question, and I will definitely be excited to know what you think about that. And with that, my friends, we come to the end of today's episode. We talked about a lot of interesting things. I would love to hear your thoughts about the topics I choose. If you have any suggestions, please pass them along. If you have any questions, because today we started the Q&A section, the question and answer section, please send your questions to ask@englishpluspodcast.com. And as I told you earlier, you can include any information that you would like me to share about you on the podcast, like we did with our friend Isabella from Brazil. Now, with that being said, I would like to thank you very much for listening to another episode of English Plus Podcast. This is your host, Danny. I will see you next time.